Hello and welcome to episode 24 of Calder's Calling, the Calder Times flagship podcast and your premier podcast destination for everything surrounding the American Hockey League. I am your host, Jay Foster. This is my co-host, Corey Swartz. Dina is out today, but she will be back next week. Don't worry about it. And we're here to give you, like I said, everything you could possibly want about the AHL and specifically the playoffs. We're doing a big old playoff episode today, which should be fun. But before we kick that off, if you aren't already subscribed to us on your favorite podcast platform or on YouTube, go ahead and do that now. If you're watching us on YouTube, feel free to like this video, share it, leave a comment. If you hit the little bell button that's below this video, you will get subscribe. You will turn alerts on, and that means that you'll get an alert every single time we post a new episode. So really cut out the middleman here. And also, before we get started, I'd like to thank our show sponsor, Document Doctors. While not on the ice, they can help you and your business optimize and increase your revenue and profits to a bigger slice. Check out documentdoctorsllc.com. Don't forget to mention that the Calder Times sent you to them. So let's start off, as we always do, Corey, with our quick hits. And it feels appropriate to talk about some awards, considering you have an award of your own, which you were given last night, and I believe you are wearing the spoils of that award right now. So one of the podcast hosts is a champion, and it's not me. So congratulations to Corey and the Flamingos for both winning the championship and also having the goalie with the best pads I've ever seen. But let's talk about the AHL awards, and spoiler alert, Hershey wins everything. No, not quite, but why don't you start us off, Corey, talking about who wins the award for the best goalie of the season.
Yeah, so among the best awards here, amongst obviously, like Jay said, there's a lot of Hershey awards here, some great stuff. The top goaltender in the AHL was Hunter Shepherd. We will get into talking about him plenty in this episode, I believe. The top defenseman was Kyle Capobianco from the Manitoba Moose, formerly of the Tucson Roadrunners. Top coach in the AHL is Todd Nelson from the Bears. And we also have some of the all-star teams here. So we'll start with this one in order, starting with the rookie team. We have, and you're going to have to help me out with some of these ones, Jay.
Do you want me to do the rundown of the teams? Because I was a bad script writer and did only put the last names, one of which I did spell wrong. So I'll go ahead and run through the rookie teams and then the first and second All-Star teams. So rookie teams in goal, we've got Joel Blomqvist. We've got Brent Clark and Logan Mailloux on defense. That is Clark of the Ontario Reign and Logan Mailloux of the Laval Rocket. Joel Blomqvist of the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins, if you weren't aware. Josh Doan of the Tucson Roadrunners. Brad Lambert of the Manitoba Moose. And Logan Stankoven of the Texas Stars round out the all-rookie team. That feels pretty well-deserved to me. Josh Doan was kind of a surprise, and then I looked at his stats in a little bit closer detail because I'm covering the Roadrunners in their playoff run, and kid had a good season. So I feel pretty good about the all-rookie team. The big boys now, the first all-star team, we got Hunter Shepherd from the Hershey Bears, he's on this list four times, I think, in this end-of-season award. We've got Kyle Capobianco, who in defense. We've got Brad Hunt in defense, who I believe, I did not write this down, I'm a bad person. Brad Hunt is with, I want to say, the Bakersfield Condors. I'm just going to check that. I'm just going to check my facts on that real quick. Don't mind me. The Colorado Eagles. So I was almost right, but not. Maverick Bork of the Texas Stars. Adam Gaudette of the Springfield Thunderbirds. And Logan Stankoven also is not content with being one of the best rookies. He was also one of the best forwards in the AHL this season. So he gets accolades for the first All-Star team as well. Second All-Star team, Joel Blomqvist makes his second appearance on this list. Jake Christensen of the Cleveland Monsters. Brent Clark makes his second appearance on this list. Samuel Fagamo of the Ontario Reign. Trey Fixmanski of the Cleveland Monsters and Rocco Grimaldi of the Chicago Wolves. Now, Grimaldi, I feel like finished literally second in scoring in the entire AHL this season on a team as miserable as the Wolves. And that feels pretty good to me. One thing I want to kind of point out to these three teams specifically is how many of the rookies made it onto just the regular first and second All-Star teams. I believe it was four of them. Blomqvist, Clark, and Stankoven. So three. All made it onto the regular first or second All-Star teams, which I think proves the point that I've been yelling all season, which is the rookie class this season has been so dang good, I don't really know what to do with myself about it. It's fun.
I mean, to really throw one in there, I mean, you know, you look at the rookie team with Blomqvist in goal. I mean, like, to me, I was a little bit disappointed when I saw it initially because I was like, man, well, Clay Stevenson had such a great season. But it was almost, you know, obviously I'm saying that because I want all of the awards, not just some of the awards, and I'm being a little selfish in that respect.
Corey will not be happy until every award has been won by a Hershey Bear.
Exactly. But, you know, it's like you said, it is a spoil, you know, what is an embarrassment of riches in the sense that there are so many great rookies that you could almost come up with a snub for each category in a lot of ways. Like you said, like Josh Stone, you know, is one of them who had a great season, you know, probably a sneaky good season. And, you know, I kind of think of him in relation to the Rocco Grimaldi selection for the second All-Star team. You know, you kind of look at some of these players that are on, you know, different teams. Not all of them are, you know, a powerhouse things. You know, having some great seasons in unexpected places, it's fantastic. So many good storylines, I think, is the best part.
Yeah, 100%. I'm just pulling up what the rookie scoring race was like. Because, you know, this isn't even counting guys like Maki Samoskovich for Charlotte, who had 54 points in 62 games. Brennan Othman had 49 points in 67 games for Hartford. Like, you could make an entire list of snubs for these teams and still come up with a pretty good second rookie team. Clark and Mayu were far and away the best defensemen in terms of rookies, I think. I'm just looking up at points and stuff. But, like, Olin Zellweger is an option. Ethan Delmastro is an option. There's just so many good rookies that it's hard to, like I say, I don't envy the people that had to pick just five of them or just six of them. Let's go on to some... not necessarily... It feels weird to call these awards because they weren't like, well, I guess they were awarded, but they weren't like chosen. They just kind of happened, if that makes sense. So we're going to talk about the winner of the points race, the goal race, and also the winner of the Harry Holmes Award, which is given to, it's basically the William Jennings Award for the AHL. It's given to the goalies that allowed the fewest goals in the regular season, or the goalie tandem. So why don't you take us through those, Corey?
Well, yeah. So we start off with the point scoring race, and Maverick Bork from the Texas Stars is going to take that one. He's just been absolutely electric the entire season. Really, I mean, from start to finish, it's hard to pick a player that's truly, I believe, done better than him consistently for the entire. You know, you can say that. You know, even going into today's episode, which is after day one of the playoffs. Picked up right where he left off. One game so far in the Calder Cup playoffs and played. He has two goals and two assists in one
casual.
Game.
It's fine. So, that's a normal, you know, amount of points for one game.
Yeah, he can just keep scoring points and, you know, never relinquish the title. You know, we may be talking about June, even if the Texas Stars aren't in. And he might still have won already the playoff scoring race, too. Moving back east, Adam Gaudette won the goal scoring race. I want to pull up his stats here a little bit because I just saw it was
44 goals this season.
What was the count again? Sorry?
44, I believe.
44. Wow, that's insane. You know, it was one of those things, again, just kind of like the Stars, like the Springfield Thunderbirds didn't exactly have a great season, but Adam Gaudette, like, you know, his foot was on the gas pedal the entire way. So we move on to the Harry Holmes Award for the best goaltenders. And in this case, it is the Hershey Bears tandem of Hunter Shepherd and Clay Stevenson. We talked a lot about them this season. You know, they reset Hershey Bears history, which 86 years is not easy to do by any stretch, with shared shutouts, with 12 between the two of them, as well as, you know, being number one and two, Shepherd number one, Stevenson number two in the league in terms of the statistical categories there. And the Fred T. Hunt Award goes to Charlotte Checkers goaltender Spencer Knight. So lots of good goaltender representation here.
You love
it's to crazy. To, I was going to say, it's crazy to me. You mentioned Mackie Samuskevich earlier and the Charlotte Checkers. And I have to say, you know, they were a very formidable foe for the Bears in the last couple games of the season here. There's a lot to be excited about if you're a Charlotte Checkers fan.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Charlotte Checkers in a minute, because I think that series might be the most over and done before it gets started of all of the series. Before we move on, I just for fun, I wanted to look up the Springfield Thunderbirds goal stats. So Adam Gaudette led the entire league with 44 goals. Would you like to guess, unless you looked this up already, how many goals second place on Springfield had this season?
Oh, I remember seeing this stat once before. Wasn't it something like, it's not even 20 is the next best. Like, it's like
second place 16 in goal scoring something. For the Springfield Thunderbirds is Will Bitton, who had 17 goals.
17, that's what it was. Oh, man, that's Adam Gaudette had 30
more
score.
Points than second place in scoring on his team. Like, we're going to talk about our stars of the season in just a minute here. And now I'm considering, like, maybe I should have picked Adam Gaudette. I didn't, but he's the MVP of that team, and he very nearly dragged them into a playoff spot as well. If I remember rightly, they fell just short of a playoff spot.
And you think of all the players that the Springfield Thunderbirds lost over the course of the season. We talked about, like, at the beginning, it feels like forever ago now, how Springfield was the least impacted team in terms of recalls for at least the first like month and a half or so. And then it just seemed to kind of come in droves. Like, when they lost Nathan Walker, they lost, you know, so many top tier guys, it seems like. And that just, you know, it didn't have an effect immediately, but just sort of seemed to be a sinking ship over the course of, especially the last, you know, few weeks, and certainly the second half of the season.
Yeah, 100%. Let's move on. I teased a little bit here with what we're going to do next. We normally do our three stars of the week. We're going to change that up a little bit, because between like the regular season finishing and the playoffs getting started, it would feel kind of disingenuous, I think, to pick a star of the week because of the different kind of games that have been played. So we're going to do stars of the season. Unfortunately, there's only going to be two of them. But maybe we'll give Adam Gaudette an honorary star for outscoring everyone else on his team by literally almost 50%. But Corey, why don't you take us away I bet all of our listeners at home cannot guess what team your star of the season plays for.
It'll be the surprise of absolutely nobody, but I am going with Hunter Shepherd from the Hershey Bears. Figure he already got, you know, enough awards, and we talked about him already quite a bit, but Jay, I just have a hard time picking somebody else. I know you're a big fan of goalies, and this is, you know, by zero means any disrespect to Clay Stevenson in the slightest, but especially in the second half of the season, you know, just Shepherd, you know, by his standard, I think had a little bit of a slow start, but the numbers speak for themselves in their own way. But I have just never felt a more palpable sense of comfort for a team when a goalie is in goal, maybe ever, than I've seen from Hunter Shepherd this season. And, you know, the awards and the stats, you know, he was the only goalie in the AHL to have a sub-2 goals against average, you know, just some eye-popping stats, you know, in addition to the shutouts, in addition with the, you know, just all the accolades and all those things. But what I love about the most is, like, there's just a feeling in net where it's, you know, even with Hershey's season finale, it could have gotten ugly a couple of times in the game. It wasn't Hershey's best game by any stretch, but it's the Hunter Shepherd effect. He kept them in the game. You knew it wasn't going to, you know, it was going to take a perfect play that, you know, Hershey just doesn't give up very often to, you know, have him scored on. I just can't think of anybody, maybe in the league, maybe ever, that I've seen that you could just have this unrelenting feeling of comfort when they're in goal, no matter what team. You know, you could have put my Flamingo team in front of Hunter Shepherd and still probably had a chance to win that game. And so, disrespect to my team, but at the AHL level, Hunter Shepherd is him at this point.
100%. And I tease about Corey always picking the Bears for like his stars of the week, or if we ever have to talk about something, he's like, I'm going to talk about the Bears. And like, I tease, I do it with love. That's what happens when you have the best team, almost the best team in AHL regular season history, is you get to talk about them a lot. And I feel like haters should just pick better teams or shut up, you know? So like, I get it. I considered picking picking Shepherd as well. I am going to go with a player that I have covered on a previous beat and I'm covering again for the postseason. And that's Samuel Fagabo, who plays for the Ontario Reign and was one goal below Adam Gaudette for the scoring race. Samuel Fagabo finished with, and here's the insane part, Samuel Fagabo played 50 games for the Ontario Reign this year. Adam Gaudette played 67 for Springfield. Samuel Fagabo had 43 goals in 50 games. Of any player who played more than 16 games this season, Samuel Fagabo has the highest point per game. He has 1.24 points per game, finished with 62 points on the season. But it's less of a... I think it's weird because I'm like, okay, do I pick the guy that was extremely good on his own on a team, or do I pick a guy that probably had slightly better individual stats but played on a better team? You know, like Sammy Fagamo has been attached to the hip to TJ Tynan all season, and it's paid off because Tynan just loves to give assists out like it's his day job, and Fagamo loves to score goals, so it's a real kind of match made in heaven there. But just what a great player. That I believe the Kings actually, they put him on waivers to try and sneak him down to Ontario. He was claimed by Nashville, who then put him back on waivers like 2 weeks later, and then he went straight back to the Kings, and they were like, cool, we're going to just pop him in Ontario and let him cook. So one of those guys that probably should get a longer look than he's been given at the NHL level, but yeah, I didn't realize that he'd played so few games to almost beat. He played 17 fewer games than Gaudette and scored one fewer goal. So what would he have
been impressive
with a full season in the AHL, you know?
It's scary. That's a scary thought.
He's a really fun player. I'm a big fan, and I'm looking forward to him just making the Bakersfield Condors miserable starting tonight. Which you'll be listening to this podcast after tonight's games have already happened. But nevertheless, we're going to talk about them in a minute here. Before we move on to our next segment, though, I have some more to share about our sponsor, Document Doctors. Is your business growing beyond the four walls of your office? As businesses grow, so do the challenges of keeping people trained, safe, and supportive. Document Doctors is a proud sponsor of the Calder's Calling podcast and the Calder Times, and they offer affordable solutions to help optimize your business and keep the good times rolling. They offer content-focused solutions such as training document creation, back office process optimization, policy and procedure development, and much, much more. Support the podcast and the Calder Times by visiting them at documentdoctorsllc.com, and don't forget to mention us when talking to their team of contentologists. Once again, that is documentdoctorsllc.com. Shop and support small businesses today. Now, Corey, we've got a bunch of games kicking off, probably about 10 minutes after we finish recording is when most of these games will start. But let's start off with Belleville and Toronto, which is going to be a really interesting series, I think. Belleville kind of just decided that they were making the playoffs like 2 weeks before the season ended, and like it worked out for them. They did it. They eliminated Laval. But Toronto, I feel like, doesn't quite know what they have in their opponent. Going into the postseason, the Senators were 8-2 in their last 10. The Marlies were 4-5-1, and a good amount of the Marlies players that would be difference makers in this series are probably up with Toronto as Black Aces right now. How do you feel about this series going into it?
I agree with you. I think that the Marlies have to come out ready. And these are two teams that play each other a lot during the regular season. So they should have some measure of knowledge of each other as to, you know, what works, what counters, what doesn't. But I do think the disparity in terms of manpower may be enough. I mean, like you said, there's a couple of teams in this bracket, you know, that kind of fall into this bracket here where, you know, the impacts from their NHL team are going to be felt. And like you said, you know, Belleville's coming in hot. They're 8-2-0 in their last 10 games. Three-game winning streak going into the end of the regular season. And the Marlins, they're the complete opposite. They were 0-3 in their last three games heading into the end of the regular season. You know, they kind of limped into that last spot in a lot of ways here. So my worry if I'm Toronto is like, you know, we got to shape up or ship out at this point. And, you know, a three-game series, you don't have a lot of time to make those mistakes or recover from mistakes if you make them. And, you know, now they don't have the benefit of home ice, I believe. They kind of lost out late in the season like that. You're playing on the road. There's some bad writing on the wall for Toronto going into this series. So you're kind of counting and leaning on that experience to maybe shift that tide a little bit. If you can say, hey, like, you know, they put their best foot forward and, you know, they steal the first game, then you're suddenly in a great position on enemy ice to, you know, hopefully, you know, or when you get back to home ice, I should say, in the second game to hopefully kind of shift the tide here. But like you said, I think it's heavily favoring Belleville just, you know, just a bit on that end of the regular season finish. And I'd be curious to see if Toronto has the moxie. Like you said, I think they're missing a couple of players on recalls or a couple of teams here. If that's just the odds are just too insurmountable against them right now.
Yeah, that's what I think also. The North Division got real weird at the end there because it kind of had the same problem as the Eastern Conference in the NHL, where it felt like no one wanted to make the playoffs except for the Pittsburgh Penguins. And this time it kind of feels like no one wants to make the playoffs except for the Belleville Senators, because like I said, Toronto was 4-5-1 in the last 10 games. Like you said, they're on a three-game losing streak going into this series. Utica finished the season 4-4-1-1 in their last 10, so only 4 wins in their last 10. And Laval as well, who basically had that last spot. All they had to do was not lose to Belleville several times. And instead of doing that, what they did was lose to Belleville several times. So they were 4-6 in their last 10. So Belleville really kind of, they are taking advantage, I think, of a North Division that might have kind of run out of steam a little bit at the end here. You know, I feel like we talked all season long about how strong the North was, and that's why it was so impossible. And even so, like, every single team in the North Division finished with a points percentage of above 500, you know, versus, let's say, the Central, where the Manitoba Moose made the playoffs with a points percentage of 493, you know. They would be dead last in, they would be out of the playoffs in basically every other, in every other conference. So the Moose really, really taking advantage of the fact that the Central Division was Milwaukee and a bunch of other teams. Belleville, yeah, I mean, let's do a bold prediction. Who wins that series and in how many games?
Oh, I think you have to go with Belleville. I think there's too much in terms of insurmountability for Toronto. I think it's going to be Belleville. I think it's going to be 2 games. I don't see it going that much further. I mean, if it could go to 3, but I feel like the Senators at least into this series, now we'll see where to go, you know, should they win and move on. They feel like a little, you know, the closest thing to a tidal wave maybe in this North Division race that, you know, they're kind of sweeping in and, you know, they just have this, you know, they have the hot hand, so to speak, and you need that going into the playoffs. You know, I hate to say when, you know, I dislike it when teams rest players or they, you know, they'll dress a B team in their, you know, last couple of games. Cause like you need to have a good feel going into it type of thing. And I feel like that's, you know, I know a couple of teams that did that. I don't love it. You know, sometimes, you know, it's out of your hands with your NHL affiliate and all that stuff, but Belleville, I think, finished the season the right way. And I just don't see them letting up just because we're beyond game 72.
Yeah. And I think it helped that their parent team was out of the playoffs significantly. Didn't really have anything in terms of, well, we can jump up in the standings. We can ruin other people's playoff hopes and dreams, et cetera, et cetera. So Belleville, well, yeah, we'll finish strong. We'll take all of our young players back from Ottawa and we'll start rolling now, you know? I agree. I think, and again, this is, I feel like if Belleville wins that first game, which I'm expecting they will, it starts, I think, in about 20 minutes as of the time of recording this. If they win that first game, I think it's going to be blood in the water. And I think game 2, they're just going to tear the Marlies into tiny pieces. So I am not expecting, I know I said earlier that Charlotte and Hartford might be the most over and done before it even begins series, but like Belleville and Toronto might be, it's going to be a bloodbath. I'm just not sure if it's going to be a bloodbath where Belleville just rips them into pieces immediately, or whether it's that like both teams are legally dead by the time the series is over, because those teams do not like each other. So as someone who is kind of tangentially rooting for the Monsters, to come out of the North, they will be playing one of Belleville or Toronto. So I am kind of like looking at them as like, if y'all want to tire each other out in the first round so Cleveland can just kind of sneak on by, that would be great. I would love that. But yeah, I agree. Belleville in two, maybe three, depending on what Toronto does. But I think if Belleville wins the first game, they're going to win the second game. So let's talk about that other series. We talked about Maki Samoskovich a little bit earlier. The Charlotte Checkers and the Hartford Wolfpack, their series actually kicks off tomorrow. So tonight, as of you guys listening to this podcast. And Corey, since you are our Atlantic Division guy, how do you feel about this series going into it? Is it kind of a foregone conclusion that Charlotte is going to take Hartford's lunch money?
I'm going to be bold and say no. And the reason I say that is, you know, it doesn't look great when you look at it from like the perspective of saying, okay, like let's look at how, you know, Charlotte was kind of on fire. They, you know, finished the season well. Hartford, it doesn't really look like they finished it so well on paper, but I want to back up a little bit on Hartford. I was just kind of looking at their last little bit of schedule. There was one point, I remember we kind of, you know, pointed it out at one point where the Hartford Wolfpack were like, what, something like 1-8-0-1 in their last 10 games, and you know, were extremely struggling. They kind of righted the ship for a little bit there towards the end. They won four games in a row, which ultimately culminated in them, you know, locking in their playoff. But there was actually a significant fear at one point, I think, for them that they, you know, they might lose out the whole rest of the season and miss the playoffs. I think was a very real possibility. Managed to avoid that. But one of those wins happened to be the last time that they played the Charlotte Checkers, and Hartford took a 5-2 win in that particular game. And I wanted to pull a little bit from the stats here to kind of mention that, you know, they went down early. They went down 43 seconds in and rattled off five unanswered goals. Now, there's no empty netters in that game. Five unanswered goals. I think it was kind of a nice little feather in their cap to kind of say, hey, we, you know, Charlotte's really good, but we have guys that can score too. I mean, you know, just a couple of guys. I mean, they have a couple of near 20 goal scores just from, you know, what I'm looking at here. But it was just one of those rare ones where like that kind of puts a little bit of a fear in your head if you're Charlotte, I think, to say, hey, like that wasn't our best game. Like we, you know, could these guys pose a threat? Now, Charlotte, let's look at it the other way. I did want to mention this at some point, Jay, because we talked earlier about how I only pick Hershey Bears for my Stars of the Week. I was all set. If this had been Stars of the Week, I would have picked, and I believe we can verify this on our Discord channel chat, that I was set to pick Maki Samoskevich for my Star of the Week had it been a Star of the Week, because all this guy does is put up points. He's insane, and he hates the Bears, apparently, or loves to play against them, I should say, because he had a three-assist game and a loss and, you know, continued to light it up with I know he had at least 1 point, I believe, a goal on the second game in the rematch on the end of the season for the Bears. So, you know, they just have this wealth of these guys that can just score. You know, you're not even looking at the Jerry Mayhews and the, you know, Zach Dalpies of the world. You know, you have Samoskevich. They have a lot of depth and a lot of good scoring. And, you know, I believe they are less impacted by recalls than the Wolfpack will be. So there's two factors I think will ultimately swing this in Charlotte's favor. And this is maybe jumping into my bold prediction territory here, too. It's the fact that the Wolfpack appear to, and I probably should double check to make sure this hasn't changed in the wild world of AHL transactions, but I believe the Wolfpack will enter the series missing Louis Domingue. Let me double check.
Which kind of is a point that I wanted to talk about a little bit, which is this series is going to really live and die on its goaltending, I feel like.
Absolutely.
And Charlotte is going to win that matchup every time, I think.
Absolutely. You know, they have Spencer Knight, they have Matt Guzda in their lineup, who, you know, it was kind of crazy for that series in Hershey. They almost had, I think they had four goalies that they were just rotating in and out. Like, I believe the goaltender of record for Charlotte on Wednesday, who was, why am I blanking on his name? He played for Wilkes-Barre earlier this season. It was traded partway through the season. He started that game, and then he was a healthy scratch for Saturday's game. It's not coming back to me, and I'm terrible at names, so it's partly
I know, I'm looking at the pages now, trying to figure out.
That one's going to bug me for a little bit. But
it's going to come to you in like 45 minutes, and...
Yeah, it's going to happen while you're doing the outro, and I'm going to be like, no, I remember the goalie's name. But they also had a rookie that they added out of Dartmouth. I want to say his... Oh, boy, that's going to bug me, too, because he was like 6'8". He thought Ivan Fedotov took up a lot of the net. He was absolutely massive. I really wanted to see him play. Apparently, he played the season finale in Lehigh Valley, which I believe is a loss for them. But, you know, they just have a wealth of goaltenders in Charlotte right now. So, you know, you could take one out and conceivably be fine. With Hartford, you know...
Okay, so you're thinking of Magnus Hellberg.
Hellberg, that's who it was.
Was traded. And then I'm going to guess that Cooper Black is the kid from Dartmouth.
Cooper Black. That's
again,
exactly
6'8" is simply too tall.
He made the net look very small in warm-ups that game. I remember just being like, I do not want to try to find a spot of net to hit with a shot. Like, that seems impossible. But, you know, they have four great, you know, four solid options in my book that they could go with, even if you're recalled. And, you know, with Hartford, you know, no shade to Dylan Grant. I think he's a very solid goaltender. But Louis Domingue was the hot hand. He's kind of the guy you want. And I was going to make this my segment if we, you know, weren't doing this format here. But Charlotte has this bizarre advantage, and I think it's quite wild of one. All three of those games in that series are going to be taking place in Charlotte instead of the Hartford Wolfpack getting a single game due to the travel restrictions surrounding the AHL in terms of distance. It happened with Lehigh Valley last season where they did not get a home game. Now, the concession they do make in this series is that in the second game, I believe the Wolfpack in this case would get the home ice advantage of having the last change. So, you know, it is home ice in that respect.
I feel like they should also get the home changing, like the home locker room and everything, like in Charlotte. Just because... That does feel unfair that they're not going to get like a home game. And, you know, I think I would love one day to look into kind of stats on how much, for example, the home crowd plays into it, how much travel plays into it. You know, you've got to get on a bus for a million hours instead of driving to the rink from your apartment. I would love for someone to do some kind of weird deep dive into the analytics of what exactly makes a home game better than an away game.
Absolutely. And the other kind of detail about Charlotte that, you know, maybe plays into the next series down the road is that, you know, I still consider this a conceivable advantage, is that, you know, like, for instance, we don't know what the schedule entails for the Hershey Bears or the Providence Bruins. They haven't been able to guarantee dates yet, because if either one of those two teams plays Charlotte, they still kind of get a home ice advantage in a sense by getting the series to be a 2-3. Instead of a 2-2-1 and a best of five. And, you know, it was something that the Bears kind of turned a negative into a positive when they played the Checkers last season, where they, you know, took two wins in Charlotte, and suddenly Charlotte needs to win all three games on the road in Giant Center, which is, you know, a very hard feat to accomplish. But, you know, that to me, I feel like, you know, if you're Charlotte, you know, most teams are looking at the, you know, finishing with those buys as, you know, this is a best possible scenario for Charlotte. It's almost like we need to finish top four, and we already have a pretty good solid advantage.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, actually, which is I'll do our predictions in a second here. But there's a lot of moving parts, obviously, to see who's going to play Hershey and who's going to play Providence. It's going to be so the if we assume that Wilkes-Barre probably is going to be Lehigh Valley, Hershey will play one of Hartford or Charlotte. I'm assuming we want Hartford to come out of that series, because Charlotte seems to have made life difficult for the Bears this season. More so than like life wasn't particularly difficult for the Hershey Bears this season from any team, but I feel like Charlotte made it a little bit more inconvenient to, like, on their way to a million wins. How do you feel about Charlotte or Hartford being the first round matchup, or the second round matchup, I guess, technically, for Hershey?
I feel like both teams are dangerous in their own right. I mean, with Hartford, both teams would have revenge on the mind for last season, as they were two teams the Bears kind of beat in the playoffs on their way to a Calder Cup. So it's always going to be a measuring stick. You're always going to get their best efforts. On paper, you would think that Hartford would be the easier of the two teams, certainly. But, you know, with this kind of series, I think it'd be a great test for the Bears to play Charlotte, just to kind of ramp up that difficulty. You know, the Bears still, I believe, won the regular season series with Charlotte. But as you said, Charlotte plays a hard, heavy game that would be a massive test for the Bears. And especially if the Bears continue to miss as many players as they are from the Washington Capitals, you know, provided the Rangers don't hopefully, you know, put the kibosh on that here in too much too soon. You know, I think you're looking at a very really evenly matched series between the Bears and Charlotte or Hartford, hypothetically. I do think Charlotte would be the challenging one, mainly because of travel, but either or, I think you're looking at a very tough battle.
Yeah, so let's do official predictions then. You went first last time, so I'll go first this time. I'm going to go, you know what, I'm going to go bold. I'm going to go Hartford in three. I think
that's very cool.
Like we talked about it a little bit in the segment. I think it's going to really be, can Hartford score more on Spencer Knight than Charlotte can score on Dylan Garon? And I don't know. I have a feeling about, like, it's based on literally no stats. There are literally no stats that I am basing my prediction on, but I feel like Hartford in three. I think Hartford wins game one. And puts the fear of God into Charlotte. And, you know, we've seen flashes of Hartford this season as this, you know, offensive, incredible juggernaut that can't be stopped. And if there was ever a time for them to turn that on, it's now.
Absolutely. And it is worth mentioning, you know, Hartford has a very balanced scoring mix. They have, you know, three players with 11 goals. You know, I'm just looking at some of the stats. 220-plus goal, you know, basically round into three with Alex Belzile leading the team with 50 points. I'm going to kind of go a little opposite of it, I think. I think it's still going to go three games, but I'm going to go with Charlotte in three games, possibly overtime.
Game three overtime is going to be... We're manifesting it on Calder's Calling now. So whenever game three is, which I believe is going to be Monday...
I think it would be Sunday, if I'm not mistaken. I believe that the games only go.
Their first game is Thursday.
I believe the games only go as far as Sunday, but I could be wrong. Okay, so
it must be Thursday and then Saturday, Sunday games. But anyway, the point is, by the time that you listen to the next episode of Calder's Calling, there will have been a 7 overtime game in game three of Charlotte and Hartford. And we're not sorry. And we do it again if we had the chance, because we love to jinx things here on Calder's Calling.
We're very good at that.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break. And then when we get back, we'll talk about the Western Conference, which also gets started tonight as of the time of us recording this. But before we do that, I want to talk to you about sports betting. And I want to talk about BetStamp, because while sports betting continues to rise in popularity, having multiple sportsbook options is the simplest way to maximize your profits. There's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/AHL, you're going to be connected to all of the sportsbooks in your region, along with a review of each platform and its unique benefits. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users. When you register through our link, you will automatically receive the top offer at each one. When you use multiple sportsbooks, you can ensure that you can always access the best available odds, which is the key to successful sports betting. If you want to take advantage of these benefits and support our podcast, please consider signing up your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/AHL. Must be 21 or over, only valid in U.S. states and Canadian provinces where sports betting is legalized. Please gamble responsibly. Now, Corey, I know that we're all the way out in the desert in the West, very far away from Hershey, but I want to talk about, let's start by talking about the Tucson Roadrunners and the Calgary Wranglers. And I think I was as surprised as anyone when I started doing some deeper digging into, or not even deeper digging into this series. I just looked at the standings and was like, oh, Calgary is the seventh seed in this situation, and Tucson is the second seed. What's up with that? And I think the answer is Calgary lost some big pieces. Tucson gained some big pieces. You know, we've already talked about Josh Doan. They picked up Matthew Vallalta, who led the AHL in wins this season and played approximately 7 million minutes. Don't quote me on that as an exact stat. But this series has all of the building blocks to be just an all-time barn burner, I think. It's impossible to count out Calgary while Dustin Wolf is in net. He's got 22 postseason games and I believe 4 shutouts. It's gonna be a wild one out in the Western Conference with Tucson and Calgary.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's, like you said, the potential to be, you know, you can't discount the Calgary Wranglers. Like you said, they, you know, had a hard time coming down the stretch here. I mean, I see they're going into it on a 5-game losing streak, which in my opinion does not bode particularly well, while Tucson's entering in on a 7-game point streak, 6-0-1-0, coming into that. So I do think that the billing lives up to favoring the Tucson Roadrunners in this one. I mean, they've just been hot for so long. It's kind of hard, you know, like you kind of alluded to a little bit there, hard to imagine Calgary in this kind of spot after the season they had last year. But, you know, some factors outside of their control. Like you said, they're in it. They have Dustin Wolf between the pipes. That always gives you a chance. But,
and I believe, you know, sorry to interrupt, but I believe Dustin Wolf was with the Flames for the end of the regular season.
So
the Wranglers will not have had Dustin Wolf. I want to say for like the last month and a half of the season, he's been up with the Flames. So now he's back. And again, like you said, they made it into the playoffs. All you need to do to get a chance to win the cup is to make the playoffs. And I think I picked Tucson in my season preview, but it's just so damn tough to bet against a guy like Dustin Wolf, who, correct me if I'm wrong, was the MVP last season. And I believe the season before as well. I believe he was back-to-back MVPs with the AHL.
I believe that's true. As hard as that is to believe in myself.
And he's doing all of this at being 6 foot tall, which is, as we all know, is an impossible height for goalies to be because they can't be any good. But I'm a huge Dustin Wolf fan. Like, I'm kind of rooting for the Roadrunners here because I like so many of their players, but it's just really hard to root against Dustin Wolf, and it's really hard to bet against him as well.
I do believe the fun potential of that series is very high in the sense that, you know, there's probably going to be a lot of great scoring, as you said before, but goaltending, I think, is going to be an even bigger stat in a lot of ways too, where you're kind of, you know, like you said, the Roadrunners have Matthew Vallalta in goal. You know, he's been solid, but, you know, I think that a strong offensive team like the Wranglers could probably, you know, hopefully find ways to beat him type of thing. I think it's just going to be, you know, it's one of those games where it's, you can point to certain players, like, you know, obviously Wolf is a big one, but this is truly a team test, I think, for a lot of them. And, you know, since the Pacific Division is pretty chaotic in terms of its matchups, I think it's going to be, you know, who can play the best team game in addition to getting some of those clutch performances to, you know, sometimes the clutch performances only go so far, right? Like a great goaltender, like even Dustin Wolf, can only keep you in for so long before, you know, your team flaws are exposed type of thing. So I think it's a really good test to see, you know, to kind of earn the right to advance in these playoffs here. You know, you have to earn it. Like you said, you can get in, but you really have to earn it. And that's going to be the test for both these teams.
Yeah, 100%. Just to finish off here, we'll do prediction in a second. I looked up Dustin Wolf. He was not back-to-back MVPs. He was back-to-back best goaltender in the AHL. But I want to read off some of his accolades. His rookie season in the AHL was 2021-22. So this is only his third full season as a pro. Which, when I talked to him at the AHL All-Star game, it kind of hit home, like, how young he is. And because it's very, he's like 22 and he looks it, you know. But in his rookie season in the AHL, he was named to the AHL All-Rookie Team, the AHL First All-Star Team. He was given the Baz Bastian Memorial Award for the best goalie in the AHL, and he led the AHL in wins with 33. Now, for context, Matt Vallalta led the league this season with wins with 31. So Dustin Wolf did that as a rookie and then some. And then last season, so his second year in the AHL, he had the best save percentage in the AHL, the best goals against average in the AHL with a 932 and a 209 respectively. He was named the best goaltender in the AHL, was part of the best goaltending duo in the AHL. So the Harry Holmes Memorial Award that the Hershey Bears goalies just won. First team All-Star. He had the most shutouts in the AHL, the most wins in the AHL at 42 wins on the season. And he also had he also won the Les Cunningham MVP award for the AHL. So that's not a guy to head against. It just isn't, you know?
And it's also worth mentioning
flaws in their game. But if there was, I think, of any single player in the AHL to like physically drag their team to a cup, it's Dustin Wolf.
It's also
whether the Wranglers want to go or not.
Bad season.
You know?
Oh, absolutely. And he hasn't had a bad postseason yet. I mean, you know, he took 5 wins in 9 games last season. The season before that was Stockton. You know, again, they made some pretty deep runs in some pretty tough situations. Like I wouldn't bet against him either, honestly. I mean, to like you said, the Flames may go in kicking and screaming, but he is going to give them the best possible chance to steal at least a round off of this series, I think.
Yeah, it's another one of those ones where it's going to go to 3 games. And I guess I have to hold myself to the prediction that I made in our official Call to Times playoff previews, which you could find online at thecalltotimes.com. We have them for all of the opening rounds of the Calder Cup playoffs. And I guess I have to pick the Tucson Roadrunners, but I don't think, like, Calgary's not going to go down easy. More specifically, Dustin Wolf is not going to go down easy. I think it is going to be a case of he's winning these games and you guys can come along if you want to, I guess. Kind of in the same way that I always mention this, but do you remember the LA Kings playoff run in 2012? They snuck into the playoffs as an 8th seed, and then Jonathan Quick decided he was winning a Stanley Cup and everyone else can come along if they wanted. You know, it was Jonathan Quick and everyone else was there. And like, that's the kind of vibe I get from Dustin Wolf, is he's going to win and you guys are invited, but you don't have to come.
Yeah, I agree. I think my bold prediction, I think I'll take that bet and I'll go with the Calgary Wranglers for the chaos, that it's going to be a Dustin Wolf dominated series. Now, I think it's going to go 3 games in overtime, you know,
all 3 games going to overtime.
Oh my gosh, that would be insane. But I think that Dustin Wolf is going to be the X factor for to get the Flames 1 series win where, you know, they may not go past that series. You know, they may bite off more than they can chew as their next opponent, which is kind of impressive considering the Tucson is the 2nd ranked team in the Pacific Division at 92 points, that, you know, they may bite off more than they can chew with another round. But I think that with a 3-game series plus Dustin Wolf is chaotic enough that, you know, he's going to will them into a do or die situation. And they're not going to die. They will not say, "Guess I'll die." You know, they will go to the next round. And, you know, will it be enough to, you know, go further than that? We'll have to wait and see. But I think, you know, over time, the chaos of the first round favors the Flames with such a big addition.
Yeah, 100%. And like, that's the thing about these short 3-game first rounds is if you win 1 game, you're all like, the other team is already facing elimination, you know, and that's always fun when a team when a team is 1 game away from being eliminated. I feel like that's where the fun begins. We're gonna have to keep track of our predictions, and then we'll come back to them next week. And then whoever got the most predictions right gets, I don't know, some kind of a candy bar. I don't know. One person can buy the other person a coffee. I don't know, but let's finish off our big playoff episode with the final matchup that we're going to talk about today. And if we haven't talked about a series that you want us to talk about, don't worry, because the AHL pre-show, or the other show on the Calder Times, is going to be covering the rest of the series. So if you really want some content on the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins or the Colorado Eagles, you can do that on Fridays and listen to the AHL pre-show, or TAPS, as we call them. But This is, I think, probably the series that, of the four that we've covered today, this is the one that I have the most kind of emotional emotional investment to, because I used to cover the Ontario Reign a million years ago. And they are facing off against the Bakersfield Condors. Now, this series is fun because the Ontario Reign are the affiliate of the LA Kings. The Bakersfield Condors are the affiliate of the Edmonton Oilers. Those teams are currently facing off in the NHL playoffs. And so it's fun that the AHL teams are also facing off in the playoffs. But I just, similar to the Belleville-Toronto series, I don't see a series in which Bakersfield wins this. Maybe that's too early for me to do a prediction after all of this, but like, I just look at who Ontario has, you know? Eric Portillo is one of the best rookie goalies in the league, one of the best goalies in the league, full stop. They've got TJ Tynan, who is another one of those guys that is hard to bet against. Samuel Fagamo, we talked about him already today. The only problem is that the Ontario Reign will not have Brant Clark for this. He has been called up. He got called up before the All-Star game. I think they sent him down briefly and then immediately called him back up. And I don't believe he's been with the Ontario Reign since about February. So, like, don't hold your hopes out for Brant Clark coming back. I don't see Bakersfield beating the team that Ontario has put together. I don't know if you have thoughts, feelings, emotions on either of these teams.
This one's a little bit out of my wheelhouse in terms of my general like viewing area. I know I've like, you know, on the podcast I've kind of been cheering for the Bakersfield Condors to kind of figure it out, just because I like the underdog stories a little bit. I do think that it's probably worth not, you know, it's obviously worth considering that the Condors have some good scorers. I mean, you know, Raphael Lavoie comes to mind. He leads the team with 28 goals and 50 points. You know, Seth Griffith, hard to ignore, 15 goals and 48 assists for 63 points. So they have some guys that have really lit the lamp so far this season. You know, they've spent the majority of this campaign, you know, in Bakersfield, you know, really carrying the weight. But it doesn't really, you know, to me, it kind of bottoms out at a certain point. I haven't been wowed by their numbers in recent time here, especially. You know, they are entering on a 4-game point streak, but they are 4-4-2-0 in their last 10 games heading into the end of the regular season. So I do think there's enough X factors there to be interesting. Again, it's the nature of these 3-game series, Jay. I don't know your feelings on the format, is how the format kind of impacts what is otherwise, you know, a fun matchup to look at on paper, that it's very short. You know, that one bounce, one game, you know, may decide your fate in a lot of ways, you know, may kind of, you know, I can tell you just coming off of my own little experience playing best of three series, I did not want to lose game two and then have to go into a decisive game three to, you know, have the marbles kind of all on the line there, especially off of a shootout as we had to deal with type of thing. So my thought is that, you know, I kind of like Bakersfield. I've talked myself into Bakersfield as an underdog maybe to go for three, but I do think that Ontario is just, they have the pieces of what I think is a team that could go pretty far in this, you know, chaotic Pacific Division run. So I think I will bet with my heart on this one and go with Bakersfield just because I've talked myself into it. But, I mean, you look at Ontario, they finished 8-2-0 in their last 10 games. This is certainly a premier Pacific Division team that the Condors have drawn in the first round. And I really think it's, again, going to have to be a game three, possibly overtime. Just the nature of this series, to kind of steal a series in this kind of shortened format.
Yeah, I think so. For me, kind of my argument for, I'm going to go Ontario in two, just straight up. The only thing that kind of gives me any pause in that is, I know that we've made a lot of sometimes lighthearted, sometimes not so lighthearted fun of Jack Campbell making $5.5 million to play in the AHL. He had a rough start, but Bakersfield's goalies they both kind of have very quietly had pretty good seasons. So, Calvin Pickard will be up with the Oilers for the foreseeable, so they're going to be rolling Jack Campbell and Olivier Rodrigue in Bakersfield as their goalie duo, I believe, had a 918 and a 916 save percentage, respectively, on the regular season. So, like, that's basically on par with Eric Portillo, who I believe also had a 918 save percentage on the season. So it really kind of comes down to, can Ontario outscore Bakersfield? But a lot of Ontario is resting on, is like, if Portillo gets hurt in game one, for example, I'm going to knock on wood about this because I don't want to jinx that particular thing. Ontario doesn't have a backup to answer the same way that Bakersfield does. Bakersfield could play either of their goalies and be perfectly fine. I don't know that Ontario has a backup that is as good as Eric Portillo has been for them this season. So, like, my Ontario in two prediction is basically, as long as Portillo stays healthy, the Rain will have no problems. If they have to go to their second goalie, who I believe is Aaron Dell right now, San Jose Barracuda legend Aaron Dell, it could get a little dicey, but I'm going with my heart. My heart says the Ontario Reign win it in two, and then probably have to play Colorado in the next round because the hockey gods love to make Ontario and Colorado play each other, and Colorado loves to beat Ontario. So we'll see how that goes. But I think that's kind of all we've got for today. We've done all of the series previews. Do we have anything else that we need to cover, or are we? Are we good to go and enjoy some playoff hockey? Because the Penguins and the Phantoms has just I was going to say kicked off, and that's not how hockey works. But
I do have that game up on my monitor as we're recording this here.
I'll be turning it on as soon as we are done recording, because why the heck not? You know,
it's also fair to say, you know, it's fun to have some Phantoms Penguins, you know, the Flyers Penguins rivalry is a treat we haven't had in quite some time. So to have it at the AHL level, it's even been longer. I did this sat dive for the preview. The Phantoms and the Penguins have not played each other in a playoff series since 2008, I believe. Oh, wow. So it's been quite some time. The Phantoms are just a perpetual, we're in one year, out another type of team. And, you know, they played each other a great many times in the early 2000s. Basically as soon as the Penguins came into the league. So a fun little trivia stat there to wow your friends with as this series goes on.
Yep. And once again, you can find all of our coverage about the playoffs over at The Calder Times. You can find us at thecaldertimes.com. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, all at The Calder Times, all one word. Like I said, we've got previews for every single series that has that kicks off this week. And we will have second round previews as and when they are announced, decided. We'll be catching you up on all of the AHL playoff coverage you could dream of. Taps will be out tomorrow, I believe, with Andrew, D, and Sam, and they'll be covering all of the series that we didn't in this episode. If you haven't already, make sure to hit subscribe on YouTube or your favorite podcatcher. Leave us a like, leave us a comment. Don't forget to tell your friends where they can find all the AHL hockey chatter their heart desires. We'd like to extend a final thank you to our sponsor, Document Doctors. Until next week, I've been Jay Foster. That's been Corey Swartz. We have been Calder's Calling. Go and enjoy some playoff hockey.